Please listen carefully.
Hello, universe. Welcome to the Optimist Daily Update. I'm Amelia Buckley.
And I'm Christy Jansen, and we're part of the team behind the Optimist Daily, making solutions the news. We bring you reader-funded solutions news every day in order to change the tenor of news media, social media, and the direction of your day to one focus on solutions.
7 days a week, we publish positive news stories written by award-winning journalists and delivered online to your inbox and through our social channels. And now we are sharing these solutions in a commute-worthy, walk-worthy, home office-worthy, summers on vacation-worthy podcast. Today is Thursday, August 27th, 2020.
All right, Amelia. Yeah, so it's just you and me today, kiddo. And this is pretty cool. How are you doing on this?
I'm pretty good.
Thursday morning, this lovely Thursday in California.
I woke up this morning and we have a little less smoke in the sky and there is no fog cover, which is pretty rare for our area. So I woke up in a really good mood today. How are you, Christy?
I'm good. I like how you started it with "I woke up this morning," which is always a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's the first thing you got to do.
I'm good. I'm well. And I am also good, at least most of the time. I have a bad side every so often, but only in a good way.
But this podcast helped turn it around.
It certainly does. When I was in graduate school, my graduate mentor, the professor I was working most closely with, he was from England. And he always used to give me a hard time about answering the question, "How are you?" with "I'm good," because that's a value judgment as opposed to "I'm well. Thank you very much." I think that's the American "well" is well and good.
I had a class once, a psychology class, where we had to start the class by asking each other how we are and giving honest answers. We were supposed to practice not conforming to society's standards of just saying, "Oh, I'm good." You know, we had to be honest. And it was really interesting, the answers you would get from your classmates. And some people would be like, "I'm bad today." And you're like, "Oh, okay." But I guess that was the whole point of the exercise.
Yeah. But I truly am feeling pretty positive this morning, even though I've had ups and downs, as all of us in the world have. I'm reading a book called Emotional Inflammation, and I'm getting ready to do an interview with the author there. And it's really, really wonderful. And so that'll be coming to our Optimist Daily emissaries and book review and perhaps even a chapter. And maybe we'll even get Lise Van Susteren, who's the psychiatrist who wrote the book, on the Optimist Daily update at some point. That's my goal. I think she'll be a friendly guest for us here. And she's a brilliant lady who's got some great things to say. And I'd love to share that with our listeners.
Well, that's exciting.
Mm-hmm. So that'll be in the next few weeks, probably. Look for that. In the meantime, though, Amelia, what are we going to be talking about today? What's the headline that stood out to you?
Well, I think we've got kind of a New York City-centered theme on the podcast today. So the headline that I chose to feature today is "Refill Station in New York City Laundromat Offers Waste-Free Cleaning Products." It's waste-free refill stations for all of your daily needs on household and personal hygiene products. You know, anything from soap to shampoo to laundry detergent. And there's a company that is based in Chile that's called Algramo. And they just opened a new station in New York City in a laundromat in Brooklyn, where they let people get cleaning products like Pine Sol without buying a whole new container. So it's a circular economy. You bring your own container and you refill it. And it launched in Santiago originally, but now they're bringing it to the US. And it's super exciting because not only do you eliminate the waste by having a refillable container, but they're also eliminating the poverty tax, which means that essentially you're not financially burdened by buying a smaller amount of the product. So if you show up and you only want to buy a tiny amount of shampoo or laundry detergent or whatever, you don't have to pay more per ounce as you would in a normal grocery store where you're rewarded for buying in bulk.
This is a fantastic solution. It's kind of like bulk cleaning products available on tap.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Right? And that's actually the poverty tax on cleaning supplies that you mentioned. It also has other implications, which are really negative for the plastic use. And that's one of the reasons you have millions and millions or billions of tons of plastic that are getting into our oceans in places like Indonesia and India, because they're things are sold in single-use packets, and it's more affordable for people to buy them at that size. But it also means that those little packets get into the waste stream more easily. Whereas if you can go in with your jar and fill it up with shampoo or laundry detergent or Pine Sol, and then have that product. That's a refillable container that you can use, you know, hundreds of times.
It also just promotes kind of a less waste lifestyle. You know, if you don't need that much stuff, there's so many things, especially in food. I know when I go to the grocery store near me, you can only get like 4 zucchinis and they all come together. But I can't eat 4 zucchinis in 1 week as a single person. I share them with my roommates and we figured out ways around it. But if you're forced to buy large quantities of stuff, it ends up like going bad, or you throw it out, or you just end up wasting it. So it's kind of promoting this idea of take only what you need. You don't end up paying the financial price for that, which I love.
Thanks so much for bringing this to my attention. And I mean, it's in the news feed today, but I think it's beautiful. We should maybe find some people out in Brooklyn who maybe have the opportunity to use this in Brooklyn Navy Yard, Lower East Side, see how it works. They'd be fun to have do a little mini interview with somebody there. So, and this is just a pilot program, but maybe if it does well, we can see this happening all over the U.S.
Definitely. I think your story is also based in New York this morning. What do you have for us?
It is. So the article which stood out to me, the headline is What Life is Actually Like at NYC's Hotels Turn Temporary Shelters. And this is an article that spotlights a program which is happening in New York City's Upper West Side. We've also been seeing this in California. But with the pandemic and the impact on those who are unsheltered or homeless at the moment, the fear there is having people just be in the street or congregating, and a lot of the places that they normally would be able to hang out where it's cool are closed down right now. So there's a program in New York to house folks who would otherwise be living on the street in some of the hotels, which currently have tons of vacancy, right? And the hotels that are being used are actually the more luxury ones, because those are the hotels which are having more vacancies even than some of the lower rent versions. You see 70, 80% vacancies in some of these four-star hotels. So the New York City is actually renting rooms in those fancy hotels to house some of the unsheltered folks who would otherwise be really suffering and struggling to survive right now. I think this is a great use of space, but it has definitely provoked some negative outcry. And there's a couple of recent news articles that are focusing all on the negative parts of this. In the New York Post, for example, they're talking about the crime and chaos and how the neighborhood is going down the toilet. But what this story actually points out is that there was an article from Curbed, Valeria Rasulli. She's a reporter with Curbed. She went out there and she went and interviewed some of the people who are living in these hotels. And also, it's not all chaos and crime. In fact, most of the people who are living there are just like you and me. They're just trying to make things work. And what she saw was there was actually quite a few of the local neighborhood who have shown up in support of these people who are, for whatever reason, without a permanent shelter right now. So they're living in these hotels, and there's friendly neighbors dropping off $5 gift cards so some of the hotel residents can buy snacks and drinks. There's empathetic messages that have been painted on the chalk saying everybody's welcome in the Upper West Side. It goes against this notion of the us and them, which I think gets broadcast so often and currently is kind of trying to be exacerbated by some folks in power, which I think is a very unfortunate direction. Really, everybody's a human being. Yes, there's good people and there's bad people, but most of us are decent. And even when you're down on your luck, doesn't mean you're an awful person. I think, Amelia, the story that you worked on that we shared with our emissaries, which focused on one of our emissaries who's doing work in Ventura, why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I talked to a couple weeks ago. Her name is Corinne Muller, and she is a journalist, actually, that normally she is a travel journalist who makes independent film series for National Geographic. But right now, she's kind of stuck at home and was looking for new projects. And she discovered that there was large communities in the river bottoms of Ventura in California. And she started going into these communities to bring them food and medical aid to try and keep the coronavirus from entering that communities. Her idea was essentially to bring them what they needed so they wouldn't have to come out into the community and risk being exposed, because in close quarters in many homeless camps, if one person gets a disease, it's going to spread very quickly. I got to talk to her. It was pretty amazing to see. You were talking about community outreach. The community outreach that she experienced, she started this on her own and kind of reached out to her neighbors on Nextdoor and ended up having a whole network of community members that were contributing food and services. She actually had a local attorney that came in to connect these residents with their stimulus checks, which allowed a lot of these individuals to actually move out of the camps. So they used it to repair cars so that they could get jobs and get to work. A lot of them used it to relocate. It's pretty amazing to see what a small amount of help can empower someone to do. And I think in terms of the hotel rooms, giving someone the opportunity to have a roof over their head for a couple weeks, even that short amount of time, could actually allow some of these people to get the rest and the time that they need to maybe not even be homeless anymore. I mean, if you have the opportunity to be sheltered for a couple weeks and get back on your feet, you have a place to shower, you can go to job interviews. It's giving people the opportunity to get back on their feet.
It does. But also, I think the thing that stood out to me is the acknowledgement of the humanity of these people who, I mean, life circumstances have been tough for people who end up on the street. And literally any of us could end up in that situation with just a couple different wrong turns. We like to think that that could never happen to us. We like to live in our bubbles of security, but really we're all potentially vulnerable. So to recognize the humanity and the people who end up living unsheltered is one thing. The other thing is that there's such community among the denizens of the street, as I like to call them, or the river bottom communities that Karin had experienced. I think what you find is that even there, without a permanent address, people find each other and they support each other. There's a lot of decency that you find in those relationships. You know, you support each other by, you have a little extra, you give it to someone, and then the next day they give it to you. I feel like that's a positive part of our humanity and acknowledging the humanness of these people who have been down on their luck.
Definitely. One of the most touching stories, I think, that she told me about their communities was that somebody took their stimulus check and used it to buy meals for the entire community. So for all 200 residents on the 4th of July.
I think that is very cool, because otherwise, what's it worth? You know, what does it matter that you have lots of money if you don't have anybody to share it with, right? If you don't have food, if you don't have anybody to share it with, what's the good of that? Just so you can, I mean, hole up. I'm going a little crazy being holed up in my house, honestly, Amelia. I want to have a meal with 200 people. I love that idea.
Maybe if you find a really big field, you could do a huge socially distanced 200-person meal.
I like it. So anyway, other headlines today on the Optimist Daily, which I loved. I just want to highlight that this is our lead story today. The headline reads, "Phew, California's 2,000-year-old redwoods survived the wildfires." I just thought this was such a positive story, and it just shows how resilient nature can be.
Yeah, I really like that story too, especially that one's pretty close to home for us. I know I have visited those redwoods in Big Basin and been awestruck by them. So it's very cool to see that those were able to survive, and kind of demonstrates the resilience of nature. You know, these trees are built to resist threats like wildfires.
Yeah. And you mentioned awe. And in fact, that's one of the things that Dr. Van Susteren has pointed out, is part of the problem that I think a lot of us experience by being caught up in our digital devices and in the fast moving pace of modern society, which some of us have had the opportunity to take a step back, is that when you're not out in nature, you're not in these awe-inspiring locales, you get disconnected from your sense of wonder and your sense of awe that diminishes our sense of ourselves as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, I love the fact that the redwoods are still there. And in fact, I think California's ecology has wildfires as part of the way it works out here. So it makes sense that they are able to survive this.
Yeah, I was reading a really interesting article on how indigenous practices do their own burning practices throughout the forest to keep it healthy. But essentially, the U.S. Forest Service in the 80s instituted a practice of reducing controlled burns because they didn't want to start wildfires. But in effect, they increased the amount of fuel. So now that we're facing these drier years, not only do we have a drier climate, but there's also more to burn because we've neglected nature's natural cleaning processes of getting stuff out of the forest and moving through that natural cycle.
Yeah, that's the whole cycle, destruction and rebirth.
Speaking of rebirth, we also have an article about a panda birth at the Smithsonian National Zoo. And that one's exciting because that panda is actually pretty old. So the birth was kind of against the odds there. We have a story about why painting eyes on the buttocks of cows can help save them from predators. That one has a pretty funny picture to go with it. Now pets can take part in the alternative meat movement.
And forget plastic. Here's some greener ways to freeze your food. You don't have to put it in plastic bags. You can put them into glass, metal, paper, aluminum foil, wax cartons, package free. This article gives you some tips there. There's a tiny robot that's helping surgeons with precise procedures. The food brand Kind has pledged to source bee-friendly almonds for creating all of their snacks. And that's very positive for our pollinators. And there's a parachutist who's completed the world's first jump from a solar-powered plane. All right. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for listening to today's Optimist Daily Update special edition with Amelia Buckley and Christy Jansen. Summers McKay is on vacation. But Amelia and I, for today and tomorrow, will promise to continue to share these positive solution-based stories, all these ideas on how you can participate in this changing world and ensure that it is changed for the good. We promise to continue to cover current events with accuracy, legitimate sources, and offer you the information needed most to chart new paths for all of us.
And please consider becoming an emissary on theoptimistdaily.com if you're not already. And for just $5 a month, support reader-funded independent journalism. Be part of the solution, changing consciousness, and addressing our world's biggest challenges with a problem-solving mindset. Help us keep the Optimist Daily free to all who need it, supported by those who can. Thanks for listening today, guys. I'm excited to be on the podcast for the rest of the week, and we will see you tomorrow.
Thanks, everybody. See you Friday.